If I can have a happy employee that's going to refer me a candidate, I can fill that position in less than 30 days instead of the norm, which is 55. Maybe I don't have to fill that position because I'm retaining talent. People always talk about the war on talent. Well, the best thing is if you don't lose your talent.
You're listening to CX Passport, the show about creating great customer experiences with a dash of travel talk. Each episode, we'll talk with our guests about great CX, travel, and just like the best journeys, explore new directions we never anticipated. I'm your host, Rick Denton. I believe the best meals are served outside and require a passport. Let's get going. CX Passport travelers, welcome aboard. I want you to buckle up. I want you to enjoy a pre-flight bevy as I tell you about our next guest. Our next guest is a seasoned marketing executive with a track record that speaks volumes. With over 20 years of experience in developing go-to-market strategies for business-to-business technology organizations, our guest has left an indelible mark on the industry. Today's guest, Celia Fleischaker, currently serves as the Chief Marketing Officer at iSolve, a people-first human capital management company, and the sponsor for today's episode. Celia leads the marketing organization shaping brand, demand generation, channel, and product marketing and solution strategy, all in order to help clients create employee experiences that truly matter. We all know what it means for customer experience as well. Celia is a trusted CMO, having previously held the role at Verint, where she spearheaded the development and execution of marketing and go-to-market strategies. And before that at Prose, driving AI-powered SaaS pricing solutions to optimize every shopping and selling experience. During her two-decade career at Epicor, Fleischaker held numerous leadership roles in marketing, including the head of corporate marketing and senior vice president responsible for global field marketing before becoming CMO. You know how they ask you in school what you want to do? And the classic youth answers, doctor, lawyer, astronaut pop up? Those weren't Celia's answers. Somehow Celia knew early on that B2B tech was what she wanted to do, and you can tell from her decorated tech experience. All right. The Texan in me may be exaggerating just a wee bit as far as when Celia knew this, but B2B tech is in her blood and has been her career life. Let's explore that and the world of experience in general as we spend time with Celia today. Celia, welcome to CX Passport.
Rick, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
This is fun. And this is a Friday recording. We've got kind of the weekend vibes already starting to leak in a little bit. Let's have a little fun with this. You had said something to me when we met earlier, and it intrigued me. You actively seek to blend the worlds of marketing and experience. How did that focus come about, and how are you looking to do that at iSolve today?
Yeah, it's something that, I mean, you've seen the industry change, and as you kind of mentioned in the intro, I've been in the marketing game for a number of decades. That makes me feel so old, but it's true. And I think the experience and marketing coming together, they've really started to blend, especially over the last, I'd say, 5 or so years, where you've seen more and more the brand that a company has is synonymous with the experience that their customers have. And so I do think they deserve to be in the same sentence, and they really impact each other. At iSolve, what I love, one of the things that really drew me to this is it's all about the employee experience. And what we've seen recently is, from an employee perspective, and we did some research on this, when we asked them about, hey, does your experience you're having with your company, does that impact your customers? Because people always kind of throw that out there, employee experience impacts customer experience. So we asked just directly, and they said 90% said absolutely. If the employee experience isn't living up to our expectation, it impacts how we're going to treat the customers, which is, I mean, it's good and bad, right?
Depending on your company. Though, isn't it?
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, you're right. That's a phrase that I've thrown around. I thought you can't deliver a better customer experience than what you provide an employee experience. And it's really easy to say, but to see that in hard numbers, that someone's saying, correct myself. I bet you no one says, I'm going to do everything I can to piss the customer off because I've had a bad day.
You hope
but at
not,
least
right?
acknowledging that my days do affect how I treat the customer.
It does. And I think that's where a lot of times we'll talk with, it depends on who you're speaking with. You're speaking with a head of HR, someone that's responsible for payroll, and they're concerned, really concerned. They want to make that experience so important. If you're talking to a business owner, most, again, do want to make it, but they also want to understand, I want to know the why it's so important, and I want to make my employees happy, and that's, you know, very important to me, but I also want to know it matters for my bottom line, that the investments I'm going to make here are going to make an impact on my organization and the metrics I have to deliver. And I think that correlation between employee experience and customer experience is one of many ways that it hits the bottom line.
This is your captain speaking. I want to thank you for listening to CX Passport today. We've now reached our cruising altitude, so I'll turn that seatbelt sign off. While you're getting comfortable, hit that follow or subscribe button on your favorite podcast app so you'll never miss an episode. Love it if you'd tell a friend about CX Passport. Leave a review so others can discover the show as well. Now, sit back and enjoy the rest of the episode.
Well, let's talk about employee experience a little bit. I want to go back. We need to remember to go back to bottom line and talk about this, because listeners and viewers know that I talk about tangible business value, because otherwise it's just fluffernutter, right? If we're not delivering tangible business value, what's the point of any of this? But let's start with some definitions first. When you hear employee experience in general, it's used so much. Well, when it gets used a lot, it tends to lose some of its definition, or it's just got a different meaning for you, for me, for someone else. And then it can even just become a phrase. So what does employee experience mean to you in this context?
For me, it's how the employee feels about the organization and the role that they're in. And it's something that I like to look at from the time they're a candidate with that organization, even before they're actually an employee, all the way beyond when they become an alumnus, right? Like, what is their experience? How are they feeling about that organization throughout every stage of their life cycle with a company is how we kind of define it. So it's a pretty broad definition. Mm-hmm. And then within that, you know, there are different things you want to look at each of those stages.
A lot of times we'll hear things like employee experience. Well, you know, do we have the nice pool table or the lunches or that sort of stuff? And you're talking about, no, this, it's the journey. It's the, from, even do I even want to consider being recruited by, or am I going to even pay attention to that brand from my next job stop?
Yeah. Yeah,
all the way to that alum. Yeah,
exactly. So you're starting, and if you're looking for a role, I mean, what's the first thing we do when we're looking for a role? I'm out on Glassdoor reading what their employees are saying about their experience, right? I'm talking to friends that I know via LinkedIn that might work there to understand what it's like. And so that's as a candidate where it's coming in. Mm-hmm. And then as you apply and things, and I think what's really interesting is, yeah, people like, is it the pool table? You've got the good snacks in the break room. Like, what is it that's happening?
Right.
Do you have to work in the office or at home? But as a business owner, when I'm thinking about it, or a head of HR, I'm thinking about, if I can have a happy employee that's going to refer me a candidate, I can fill that position in less than 30 days instead of the norm, which is 55, right? Like, that to me, huge. And then maybe I don't have to fill that position because I'm retaining talent. People always talk about the war on talent. Well, the best thing is if you don't lose your talent.
That's right.
And so keeping them on board is so important.
You just talk like that right there. That is tangible business results, speed to fill. And I'm not as well versed in my recruiting metric names and that sort of stuff, but getting that role filled has to be an actual tangible dollar amount that can be calculated. Talk to me about that employee experience to tangible business value that you were talking about earlier.
Exactly what you said. So to fill a position can cost 15, 20 grand. It can cost more depending on what that role is. And and then you start thinking about, I've got to retrain. I've got the time where I don't have anyone in seat. So there's just that cost. The second you have someone resign, how am I going to get that filled and get that person up to speed? And then it's a game of how quickly you can get a good person on board. And so when I was talking about in general, I mean, what we've seen is like 55 days is around the average of what it takes to fill that seat. Mm-hmm. But if I have a happy employee that tells me, so-and-so may not want to work here, refer someone. One, you know, you've already got someone that this employee is saying, I want to work with them. I want them to be in this team. And then it takes less than 30 days. So you're cutting that time almost in half.
Mm-hmm.
And so that to the business filling faster, filling with someone that's likely going to fit the role really well. You know, you're going to have a fit that works with other employees. I think that's it's pretty exciting. And so that all comes back to the experience that your employees are having. Do they want to refer people? Right. Do they want to bring their friends into the, it's the NPS we always talk about with customers, right? Would you recommend right. this company to a friend? Same thing about an employee.
And we're spending our time talking about recruiting. There's the whole element that I think would merit an entire other podcast. But what we were joking about a little bit of a good employee experience then is directly attributable to customer experience as well. And then there's a value associated with customer experience. I'm going to pause on that. We'll see if we got some time. I don't know that we will. You and I may have to talk again on another episode because I want to get to something that I had seen where mm-hmm. It was its fourth annual HR leaders research study. And there were two questions in there that really caught my eye. It was right at the beginning. I was just reading through it. And the first question was, why have employee expectations for the experience they have at work gotten out of control? But then I saw right after that the question of why haven't employees' expectations for the experience they have at work gotten out of control? I love the not yin and yang, but the both sides of that question. Yeah. What intrigued you when you saw the results of those questions?
I think what I was really pleased to see is that HR leaders don't think things are out of control. They actually think employee okay. expectations are pretty much in line. So over three quarters of HR leaders that we talked to said, you know what? No, they're not out of control. We prioritize employee experience for the reasons we've talked about. It's good business to have a good employee experience. And so the things that employees are asking about in terms of their benefits, comp, and what they want in terms of work-life balance are all reasonable things that they should be concerned about. And HR leaders are saying, you know, we want to deliver that good experience. We want to deliver fair comp at market. You know, like those things are all important to us. We want an engaged workforce because we know if we have that, so many other things fall into place. So I liked that. And then you do have almost a quarter that said, well, maybe, you know, they are out of control and people are there's a yin and a yang, like you talked about. We talk about this pendulum of things swing in the workforce from maybe the employee side to the employer side. And there are a lot of them, sometimes it's just perceived misalignment versus true misalignment. You find that HR leaders tend to be that balancing force that bring us together and say, hey, this is what we really need. And it works for the business and it works for the employee. Where people work has been a big source of, frustration, depending on who you are. We were all at home during COVID, and except for certain industries, and then we all started to come back or have a hybrid environment. There were some employers who said a mandate, which was the word no one wanted to utter, but many did. And I think we're finally kind of settling into this flexible work environment where people are working where it suits the employee well, but also what works for the business. And I think that's part of like finding that middle ground and that balance when people think about expectation is it's never going to be 100% one way or the other, but there's typically, if you peel back the layers of the onion, there's something that works for both the business owner and the employee that makes sense.
It does. And we're talking about expectations here and that sense of, you know, if the employee expects I should have the total freedom to work from home the entire time and the employer expects, no, you'll be hybrid, well, then there's a collision there. And I want to explore that gap a little bit. First, though, have you seen there's a principle in customer experience that let's take a banking customer. And there might be a bank that said, well, hey, look, our experience is better than the five banks down the road, so we're doing all right. And actually, that's not the case. A customer doesn't compare the bank to other banks. It compares it to their best experience, their best hospitality, their best restaurant, their best travel experience, whatever that might be. Are you seeing some of that in employee experience as well, where the employee expectations around experience are actually informed by their expectations around customer experience?
I think the employee expectation for experience gets formed from a lot of factors. Agreed. It's not just compared to the last role they had at a different company. The experience and the expectation is formed by what's available to them from a technology perspective externally and in their day-to-day lives. I mean, you see a lot of one of the things when we look at employee experience and expectation, we look at it generationally, right? Because there are generations that have grown up with very consumer-friendly tech and the ability to self-serve them, you know, with the knowledge that they want and need. And they expect that when they go into the workforce. And so there's this expectation around technology. And this gets into the misalignment that's perceived and maybe not real as we talk to HR leaders and they are like, look, we spend half our day answering just basic questions about benefits and pay and this quick hits, but it's taking 4 to 6 hours a day. And then you're talking to their employees, especially in younger generations, it's like, why do I even have to call and ask? Right. Like, what? And so, like, we've got a virtual assistant now, and people can get on the and ask the question, get served up the answer, and everyone's happier.
Oh my gosh! Yes.
Yeah, and it is set from your world experience, not just work experience.
That's a great. I hadn't even thought of that because I know that I've experienced. Well, actually, as a consultant, I've experienced when you go to a client and there's a set of archaic and very difficult technology experiences, just trying to help serve that brand. Then imagine as an employee, you're like, wait, no, why can't I bring my device? You know, that's one of those kind of things. I love though that you brought the technology component around benefits and that sort of stuff. I imagine you've got some stories there that where there was a gap that existed between the employees' expectation around experience and what they were actually experiencing. How have you seen technology bridge that gap successfully? What are some stories that you like?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one I just talked about, self-service, is a big one. We see that a lot where you find out that, hey, this technology can help relieve things for the HR team, but at the same time, the self-service is giving employees exactly what they want. We see that from a learning perspective with a lot of there's a real need out there for people want to stay fulfilled. One of the ways they stay fulfilled is they're engaged and they're learning and they're advancing their career. Mm-hmm. And so being able to serve up content and a content library that really can help them, they can self-select into skill sets that they want to build, that they can get prepared for that next role. We're seeing technology help them a lot from that perspective. I think AI comes up a lot. And again, you talk about misperceptions, but for AI, there's both a fear of it because it's unknown, and there's also a need to embrace it because we find it as one of those things from an analytical perspective and that people can get these insights that they've just never had to help drive the business. AI is going to help them solve for some of those more administrative tasks that they've been doing and really open up so they can be a more strategic force inside the organization as an HR team. But there's still concern, rightly so. I get it. Like, there's so much about AI that's new. They're learning about it. How do they wrap their hands around AI that's ethical and responsible and can help them do their job in a way that they're comfortable with too. So I think tech has helped bridging a lot of gaps here. It sometimes raises questions, but in general, it's a force for good.
Celia, I want to go back to what you said right there, but we are going, because that's a weighty topic, AI. There's a lot more that a thread I want to pull specifically, but something that weighty, we need to take a little break here. So I want to invite you to stop down here and join me in the First Class Lounge. We're going to have a little bit of fun here, move a little bit quickly as well. What is a dream travel location from your past?
Oh, from my past. I'm a big fan of Singapore. I love it. And I got to go there for our 25th wedding anniversary and just amazing. And the kids went with us. It was fun.
Oh my gosh. There's so many delights to Singapore. I've never had the chance to go there. It makes me sad. Been all around it, but never to it. What's a delight that you'd want to share? What was like, you just blew your mind when you were there?
The food's amazing. I'm a big fan. I love food.
I'm done. Episode over. I'm happy.
The botanical gardens are insane. Like it's just really just a beautiful country, very different than, you know, where I've lived in my life, and really just fun to visit.
That's awesome. Well, you've already checked one of my future fantasy locations off the list, but I'm sure you still have some. So what's a dream travel location you've not been to yet?
Okay, I have not visited Istanbul and it is on my
Oh,
bucket list and I cannot wait. I think I had a layover there one time. It was kind of like really teasing me, but I can't
yeah.
wait to go.
You're like, can you go ahead and delay that next flight for about 10 hours so I can leave?
I'm so tempted.
It's a dangerous thing to do. I wouldn't recommend it, but the temptation was probably there. Hey, you mentioned
Exactly.
food. What is a favorite thing of yours to eat?
All right, so I am completely spoiled. My husband is an amazing cook, right? And
Nice.
so he basically anything he makes, I'm thrilled with. And he makes fresh pasta, fresh bread. Yes. So
Ooh.
I feel really fortunate. We love to go out, but if we're staying in, I know I'm going to have a good meal.
Oh my gosh. Okay, favorite thing to eat is your husband's home cooking. I like that. Okay. Next time I'm in your neck of the woods, I might be
There
knocking on the
you
door around dinner time. Let's go the other way though. What about while you were growing up, something you hated but were forced to eat as a kid?
Oh my gosh. I grew up on a farm, a beef cattle farm,
Oh
and
wow.
I
Okay.
was forced to eat liver at times, and it just not my jam.
For those that are only listening, they don't see the wince in my face, the eyes closed, and the shake of my head. I am so with you. And what's interesting, Celia, is liver, and onions has come up a lot on
Well,
here.
as it should for that question.
Hey, stop. Just a little sidebar here. I'm curious. So you grew up on a ranch. Where was that?
I grew up outside of Louisville, Kentucky, on a
Okay.
farm, and yeah, I loved it. It was so much fun, but very different from where I'm experiencing adulthood.
Well, I can
But
imagine. Okay.
it
I would love, truly, I'd love to spend some time there. That would be intriguing, but we're not going to. Listeners, don't worry. We're going to stay in the CX Passport vein here, but we are done with the lounge. But I want to get you back into travel here. What is one travel item, not including your phone, not including your passport, that you will not leave
A
behind?
carry-on bag. This is a rule in my family with my kids. I don't care if we're gone for 2 days or 2 weeks. The fly shakers don't check a bag. So I'm very opposed to that. And so yes, we all take our carry-on bag with us, and that's what you have, regardless of the duration.
I am so impressed. We have done that on some of our trips. The Denton family, we've done Europe with carry-ons. We've done that. I will tell you one thing. In Texas, there's some bourbons that I can't get here, but for some reason are readily available in Arizona. And my wife is just driven insane by the fact these weekend trips that I'm checking bags, but just so I can bring bottles of
Bring
bourbon back.
bourbon
So
back.
if you'll allow me, Celia, that would be the one exception of the carry-on rule is I guess smuggling. I'm not sure what I'm doing, but bringing booze across state lines.
There you
So
go. You said it out loud.
hey, I have the control to edit this. Who knows if this will end up in the episode or not? We'll see. Hey, right before we went to the first class lounge, we were talking about AI and we were talking about tech. And that's an area that is incredibly sensitive. And you started to touch on it, but I really want to pull at this thread a little bit more, is that there's so many benefits associated with, but the individual employee can feel particularly threatened by it. We hear a lot about it in the contact center, right? There's AI is going to wipe out all contact center agents. And so there's a fear that's
Right.
there, whether that's rational or not. You're describing some things that I could see having HR professionals concerned too, as if, well, if they're not contacting me to ask about benefits questions or whatever that might be, what's my job? So how are you addressing those concerns of tech can help you, but how do you address the concerns of tech may be a threat to you? How do you help there?
Yeah, I think it is like an initial reaction. I came from contact center industry, so I know exactly what you're talking about with the agent side of things. But on the HR side, I think you get that immediate, is it going to replace my job? And you're also having to answer that question for a lot of your employees as well across the organization. And typically when we're talking with an HR team, we're like, well, step back a little bit. As an HR professional, what's your goal? And most HR professionals want to help drive the business, not just run the business and answer the questions, but really be a partner to that business owner, drive the business forward, be able to make some change. They can't do that if they're answering questions for half their day. And then when you position AI as one of the technologies that can help them really drive the business forward, and they start to see the benefit it can have, helping them write job descriptions, helping them, with a virtual assistant answer questions. I think you get over that hump. I think the other thing you do have to talk about, and this is a broader question that a lot of organizations are struggling with and working their way through, is picking your partners who are going to provide you with that AI How are they developing it? Is it transparent? Is it developed ethically and responsibly? And are they testing those algorithms to make sure they don't have bias? And that's very important. It's something we're very attuned to here and are very focused on making sure that we're aligned with those goals. But we deal with a lot of ISOV. We serve about 7 million employees through the company.
Gosh.
We have about 100 customers. And most of our customers are smaller, so saying a few hundred employees. And they typically don't have your data scientists and your resources on staff
right.
to do the AI. And so, one, you've got to explain it well and be able to translate it into what they need and then just make them feel very safe and secure that we're using it for the right reasons in the right way.
That's that safety, that security, and that simplicity. I don't know that you mm-hmm. said that word, but your
yeah.
theme was definitely that, especially in the smaller shops that you're describing. 100's not tiny. I don't mean that, but it's not the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands. It is that speed to implementation, that speed to use, and mm-hmm. do I feel safe and comfortable in what I'm actually being presented is got to be vital. You mentioned that y'all served, I think, how many? Did you say 7 million?
Close to 7 million.
Yeah. So you've seen a lot. You've seen a lot of company cultures. You've seen a lot of approaches to employee and customer experience. I'd like to close with, what are some of the best examples that you've seen of a company that really understands that link between employee experience and customer experience, equips their team well, and then ultimately delivers both a great customer and an employee experience?
Yeah, we, like you said, we work with a lot of them. And it's also something I'll say that we as a company try to live. We very much pride ourselves on focusing on culture and our own employee experience. And then we make sure that we stay very connected. We have a very large base, but we make it a mission to go out and meet with them. So we have what we call our People Heroes Tour, where we go out and city to city across the U.S., sitting around the table with our employees. I think we've got close to 25 or 30 cities we're going to do this year. We did almost 50 or so last year. And that, for us, is the way we hear from the customer and really understand mm-hmm. and are able to put ourselves in our shoes so that we're developing the right tech for them. Those customers, the ones that are always so impressive, are the ones that are they're so concerned. I mean, a lot of times it's the people that we're talking to, they may be the head of HR. They may also be the office manager, the payables. Like, they typically wear multiple hats. They're trying to balance so many things. And yet they still have this priority that they're putting on the employees that they're around them, trying to make sure that they have the right experience and using technology and other communication tools to deliver that.
Can I ask you a little bit more about that hero tour? Because one of the things that, and from the customer experience perspective that we talk about a lot, is get out there and actually experience your customer. Go there and talk if you can. I realize it's not always scalable, and maybe you've got to be sensitive to how you use technology versus the in-person. But tell me a little bit more about that. And maybe if for those that are viewing, tell me a little bit more about that little face that's peeking up out of those pillows back there. Didn't you tell me that was a hero before we got started?
That's Sam Solver. So we call the people that we work with, our customers, we call them people heroes. Because we really do feel that that's what they are. They're helping people across their organization be successful, have a great work experience, advance in their careers. And we have our own heroes that go with us on the road. Sam Solver is one. We have three or four of them. And they're quite the attraction at our events.
See why.
They come, they're all dressed up, and people are getting their pictures with them. And it's so much fun. But it really, it shows the pride we have in terms of our customers and what they do. We're so proud of them. And the tour, which has been going on for a number of years, certainly even before I started here. And it was the idea of this group of employees that said, you're right. Like, spending time with our customers is just the way that we're going to learn and get better and better as an organization. And once a year we have a big conference and we're meeting with them. But this is more a time when you might have 30, 50, 100 in a room with a team of our employees we call sidekicks, being able to talk with them and hear their stories and bring that back. And it's just a really great experience.
What a, yeah, it sounds like a fantastic experience. And now I want to be one of those heroes. We may need to talk off camera here about what that might look like.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, Celia, I have learned a ton here, and I imagine that there are folks that are listening or viewing that want to know a little bit more about, you know, you, your approach to employee experience and customer experience. And also, hey, well, maybe I kind of want to know a little bit more about that iSolve thing and how that can help me do better at my employee experience. How can folks get to know a little bit more about you and about iSolve?
Well, certainly for iSolve, iSolveHCM.com is our corporate website, and invite people to come there. I'd invite them to follow us on LinkedIn. We're pretty active there as well, sharing our customer stories. And then I'm best way to find me is on LinkedIn as well. That's kind of my social channel of choice.
Excellent. And all of those, as listeners, viewers, you know, scroll down. It's in the notes. You didn't even have to hit pause. It's right there. Click it and go check that out. And I do want to say another thank you absolutely to iSolve for sponsoring this episode, so that the message of employee experience and how that not only benefits the humans that are the employees themselves, but how that then helps a business improve customer experience and create tangible business results. I appreciate iSolve sponsoring that to allow this message to get out to a wider audience. Celia, I really did enjoy learning a lot. Everything from your non-love of liver to the wisdom that you had to share, certainly around employee experience, AI, and really, you know, how we can make sure that technology is viewed as exactly that, the benefit and not the threat, but really helping advance people and helping advance their objectives and their career goals as well. I enjoyed this, Celia. Thank you for being on CX Passport.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. Thanks, Rick.
Thanks for joining us this week on CX Passport. If you liked today's episode, I have three quick next steps for you. Click subscribe on the CX Passport YouTube channel or your favorite podcast app. Next, leave a comment below the video or a review in your favorite podcast app so others can find and enjoy CX Passport too. Then head over to cxpassport.com for show notes and resources that can help you create tangible business results by delivering great customer experience. Until next time, I'm Rick Denton, and I believe the best meals are served outside and require a passport.